You're listening to Radio DePaul. I'm Connor Mudd, and this is Tom Talks.
Hello and welcome to Tom Talks, the talk show where we totally talk Tom Cruise. With me today is a very special guest. They were a varsity fencer in high school. They are an expert in jellyfish and internet microgenres, and they own the Black Parade album on vinyl, CD, digital, and cassette. Please welcome to the show, Allie Durst. Allie, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty much have just been like running around, finishing up some final stuff, and then of course taking the dog to the vet.
Sure. What is your Radio DePaul show? I don't know if I've listened to it.
Vibe Check.
Amazing. What's the premise of that one?
Basically, it's like little micro genres on the internet. So like vaporwave, hardcore, sea shanties. Like I basically focus each week on a different niche genre. And if you know who Poppy is, like metal artist who's on YouTube, I actually am interviewing Titanic Sinclair this week.
Oh wow.
Who was basically the co-collaborator. So yeah.
That's awesome. I honestly, you know, I listen to some weird music. I listen to sea shanties quite a bit. Sea shanties and work songs. I've got a playlist for that. You know, perfect homework music. But you know, I think one of my favorite, I don't know if it's technically a micro genre, but I love folk punk. That's one of my favorites. Get bands like AJJ. Oh, great, terrible singers. But some of the best sound, best lyricists that I've found have been folk punk.
Like Violent Femmes?
A little. Closer to, I'm trying to think of other, it's like taking the front bottoms and adding a mandolin. Right? So that's been one of my favorite recent genres. What is your favorite micro genre that you've explored so far?
I don't want to be basic and say lo-fi. Because I have two shows. The other one's called Vibe Check Volume 2 because I'm creative. And that's my interview one where basically, and that's the one I honestly have grown to like more, is where I basically interview an artist and then I ask them, if you had a micro genre to describe your music, what would it be? And then I create a playlist for what they give me. And I really, really enjoyed, who'd I interview? Oh, I interviewed Video Age and they gave me like, oh, that was my alarm. Futuristic retro bedroom pop.
Ooh.
And it was really cool. I got like Gus Dapperton, Beach House.
I do like Beach
Jack
House.
Jack Stauber. Oh, I love space songs so much.
Oh,
that one. I saw a like not really an AMV because that's sort of for animated stuff, but in the same vein, with space song to Space Odyssey, like 2001 Space Odyssey, and it. It's so good.
That sounds like a ton of fun, though. How do you generally find artists to interview for that show?
I basically harassed Natalie to give me interviews, and I basically I'll like take any interview. I requested Video Age and Titanic Sinclair, and so those are like. I sort of like those kind of weird ones. I'm trying to get Carol Bonito because, ooh. Yeah, I find their stuff fascinating. And because I'm now cocky, because Titanic Sinclair's song Blood Money was up for a Grammy, I'm like, I'm going to try and get My Chemical Romance and Gerard Way. So.
Sure. Yeah, you reach for the fences there.
Yeah.
That sounds like tons of fun, though. Do you like DePaul artists ever, or just try to get the bigger name artists?
I mean, I'll like do like small indie artists. I've never had like a DePaul artist like approach me at all. I would be down to do an interview, but yeah, it's pretty much just I'm trying to get Galgun. If you're familiar with them, they're a Chicago-based band.
I've heard the name. I don't know if I've listened to them.
Yeah, they have, I don't, it's kind of like an Inuyasha style album cover.
Okay. Yeah. Makes
sense. If you're familiar with that anime. But yeah, they're kind of like some experimentalist punk stuff. And so I love that. I was thinking about getting Screeching Weasel, but I heard that the lead man is kind of an asshole. So it's like, so maybe not him. But yeah, I have a bunch of indie artists that I'm really into that, yeah, I'm hoping to eventually get on. But the problem is a lot of them are that lo-fi bedroom pop aesthetic. So I can only do that so much.
Sure. Yeah, I've only interviewed one musician on this show. It's a guy by the name of Luan Seguim. And honestly, his stuff is definitely in its own microgenre. I'd call it like 80s synth pop inspired pop punk. I don't even know. It's so weird. He does all 50% of his songs are based on 80s movies, which is why I brought him on the show. It's a genre of...
It reminds me of True Survivor with David Hasselhoff. What's that movie, that kung fu dumb movie that came out? Kung Fury.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like True Survivor. I had a boyfriend, my first boyfriend, and he thought that song was amazing, and he made this movie, this awful movie for our like high school film festival, where it's just like all the worst, like the white person doing JoJo references and Naruto references to like True Survivor by David Hasselhoff. It was horrible, but for some reason it won.
But
I mean, I love sort of that campy, synthy vibe. I love everything campy. Like B-rated horror films are the best.
True. Oh yeah. Can't go wrong with like a good Rubber. Do you know Rubber?
I've heard of it. It sounds like The Stuff. I know that's a different one. But yeah, I love a lot of like kind of gothic stuff. Like Death Becomes Her is amazing. Ooh. I love it.
Yeah, is that your go-to film genre then? Is kind of like the B movie, like horror movie kind of stuff?
I'd say so. I also like anything that's really eye candy. So I love and like anything dark and visually, like I love what's his name? He did the Grand Hotel Budapest. Wes Anderson.
Oh yeah,
I love Wes Anderson. I love anything very stylistic. Pretty much, like I love The Witch, that's great, and The Lighthouse, those are great films.
Ooh, yeah. I watched a fun little micro documentary about how they make the lighthouse lens in the movie The Lighthouse, and it's very interesting, very fun process.
Oh yeah, it's just some of the like the new horror directors, like the greats, like Jordan Peele, we're starting to get. It's just so exciting to see like this new sort of resurgence after like the cruddy paranormal way we had in the
2000s. Yeah, it was a lull in good horror for a minute there. How did you get into Jellyfish? Because I know that was something else. How on earth did you get into Jellyfish in Chicago?
Well, I went through some trauma in my sophomore year of high school. And basically, I sort of clung onto Jellyfish because I saw a documentary and it sort of just became kind of a safe thing for me where I was just like, I loved how beautiful they looked. I always loved blown glass art. I grew up in Missouri and I remember just seeing in the art museum, there's just this ceiling made of blown glass. And they always remind me of that. And I always thought, because I had really bad anxiety and PTSD from it. And I was just like, you know what? Just pretend to be a jellyfish and just like float on and how like nice it would be. Of course, now I know they usually get eaten by a sea turtle. They can really float on. But yeah. Ever since then, I literally am staring at my jellyfish lamp right now. I have two jellyfish above me. I have a jellyfish pillow over there. Planning on getting a jellyfish tattoo on my thigh. I have jellyfish paintings back there. I just became like a giant nerd on them and sort of have just been obsessed with them.
That's kind of amazing, though. What's the coolest fun fact about jellyfish?
I would say there's so many cool things about them. I guess a basic fact is that if they don't get eaten by a sea turtle, there are certain species of them that can live forever. And there are other jellyfish species that are actually multiple organisms that are sort of just powering the jellyfish.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's very interesting. As well as there's now parasitic jellyfish that actually you can bring onto land. And it's very interesting. They basically devolved. It's like one of the only organisms to devolve into a parasite. So, yeah, jellyfish are cool.
That is pretty cool. Do you have a favorite type of jellyfish? The blue man?
The Australian spotted jellyfish. I love the Australian spotted jellyfish so much.
I've got to pull up a picture of that. Kind of awesome, though. I dig the dedication. Ooh, that is a really cool jellyfish. I've pulled up a picture. That is so cool. I love the dedication to it too, like the full tattoo. You know, gotta go full in on obsession sometimes.
Yeah, I want my full thigh to just be a jellyfish.
Oh, that'll be dope. Yeah, is it? Are you into other sea creatures too, or just the jellyfish?
I love cephalopods, which are basically like octopi and like what's it called, a chambered nautilus. I love those kind of I don't know what's with me in like gelatinous deep sea creatures. Sure. I mean, I watch anime, but that's not the reason why I like tentacle creatures. I am a huge H.P. Lovecraft fan, just of like the mythos and sort of the creatures he created, because I always loved like Doctor Who growing up as a kid and like sort of that cosmic horror stuff. And so that kind of combined with the jellyfish thing has just drawn me to his work. And so I always find like sort of like tentacle, like weird, those like blob fish and like hag fish that you find deep under the sea. I always find those so interesting.
Yeah, I'm a cuttlefish man. I love a good cuttlefish, honestly. They're the little, are they tentacles? Are they arms? I know there's weird.
I would say they're like feelers. Yeah. Not exactly tentacles, but sort of feelers.
Yeah, and they just the way they swim is so aerodynamic, so smooth, but also so funky. Just little blobs. Yeah, jellyfish are great. The other thing, it's weird that your high school had a varsity fencing team. What sort of high school did you go to where they taught you how to sword fight?
A very rich one.
Sure.
It was Stevenson, Adelaide Stevenson, if you're unfamiliar with it, which is a school that has an obnoxious amount of funding go into it. It has like three cafeterias. It is the most obnoxious school.
Wow.
And everyone in our area hates it, just because it's so obnoxious and extra in what it decides to do. It's a public school, and it's actually, at the time I went, it was ranked the best public high school that's not lottery in the country.
Okay.
And so they have like water polo and an archery team and all this weird stuff that you're like, okay, thank you. But yeah, and so basically they have a fencing team, and fencing is three different swords, primarily epee, foil, and saber. And foil and epee are boring and they take a long time, and I'm very impulsive. So I went with saber, which is basically your classic like Jack Sparrow, Princess Bride style of fencing, where it's basically very quick, very fast. It's pretty much slashing.
Ooh, that is very, very fun. I'm a collector of swords, so I'm always very interested to hear how people get into their swords. Do you still do fence at all, like recently, or was it just a high school thing?
So I wanted to do it at DePaul, but they don't have a fencing team at DePaul, which is big sad, but I am planning on go after DePaul, because I'm currently an environmental studies major. Basically pursuing a post-undergrad degree at University of Washington in Seattle, and for marine biology, big surprise. But yeah, they have a fencing team there, and their mascot's a husky, and so it's the fencing team's mascot is like a little husky with a sword, and I'm like, I need to go there.
That's amazing.
It like has like a little fencing helmet, and I'm like, I need to go there. It's just so like, I just need to go there.
Yeah, at the very least to see if they give a sword to the mascot in the mascot suit for fencing tournaments.
Definitely.
Oh, could you imagine Dibs with a sword? I would be so scared.
Dibs looks like a Smurf and Falcor from the Neverending Story had a child. And I will stand by that statement.
That's so true.
It's the illegitimate love child crossover of the Neverending Story and the Smurfs.
Yeah. Oh.
You can quote me on that, DePaulia.
100%. I hate that Dibs just stands for demon in blue suit. I hate that with every fiber of my being.
Yeah, I honestly like to make an origin story in my head that like Leto just really liked the Dibs ice cream, and so he was like, you know what, we're gonna rename this dude, we're gonna name him Dibs. I'm also mad he doesn't like throw Dibs like the ice cream, if they even still make that anymore, at like the audience at games. I feel like that's a really big missed opportunity there.
It truly is. I honestly think they only sell that ice cream at like movie theaters nowadays, which is a travesty. But you know, you kind of gotta find the Dibs where you can get it. All right, well, this is Tom Talk, so we should probably talk some Tom. I have a few questions that I ask all of my guests on the show that are Tom Cruise specific questions. And then once we get through the Tom Cruise specific questions, we'll play a game, which is the fun part of my show. My show is weird. We're not even going to talk about Cameron Diaz. I'm not going to lie.
I love how it's just for Tom Cruise. Like, this is a show that is dedicated to Tom Cruise, not Tom Hanks.
No.
You don't stand Cruise, you get out.
I even am not a Tom Cruise fan. I'm just doing this. Like, it's not because I like Tom Cruise. I'm doing this. It's like the universe bestowed the duty of this show upon me, and I don't even care.
I actually have a Scientology book. Would that be topical to bring that out?
It could be topical. we'll go to the Tom Cruise questions. If we need to refer to the sacred texts, we'll check it out. So how familiar would you say you are with Tom Cruise's filmography?
Pretty well, mostly his older stuff, like Eyes Wide Shut and Top Gun, as well as because my dad is a huge Rock of Ages fan. Rock of Ages.
Oh, Rock of Ages is the reason I'm doing this show, actually. I was reading clickbait articles because, you know, that's what you do. And the clickbait article said that Tom Cruise's worst movie was Rock of Ages. And I said, no, it's not. It can't be. I like Rock of Ages.
There are so many films.
Right. And so I read their list of ranking all the Tom Cruise movies, and I realized I'd only seen 10 of them. And I said, well, okay, maybe I can't have an opinion because I haven't seen all of them. And then I watched all of them. And now I can say definitively that the worst Tom Cruise movie is not Rock of Ages. It is one of his other films that I haven't gotten to yet in the show, so no spoilers. But yeah, I love Rock of Ages. It's so good. What is your favorite Tom Cruise movie?
Because I'm a Kubrick fangirl, I have to say Eyes Wide Shut. Just because I think, especially in the year 2021, and everything that has come out of Hollywood, I think it is a subversive masterpiece.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I like
all the commentary and subtle like nods that Kubrick does that pretty much flew over the head of everyone. Rewatching it now, it is terrifying. Just all the subliminal messaging in it. And I love films that I get to nitpick because I'm also an English minor. Sure. And I love looking for deeper meanings in things. So I love, like, even the names of characters, the lighting, how the name of Tom Cruise's character, it's amazing.
Yeah, there is a ton of fun, like, little things that I having watched it now two or three times, I haven't even noticed half of all of the stuff in that movie. It is certainly his most complex film on the whole, but that is a good one. What is the most Tom Cruise-y thing that you have ever done?
Probably jump on a couch. Like in I did a Snapchat back when I was at Sanctuary Hall before our lovely friend Corona came. And I remember one day I was just bored, and so I just jumped on our couch for like 5 minutes.
That is very Tom Cruise.
I was just like, why not? I'm bored.
Yeah. Just have a good fun time. The last Tom Cruise specific question, it's less of a question and more of a task or an opportunity. I am going to give you 1 minute to say whatever you want to Tom Cruise. In the event that he ever listens to this show, I'm going to supercut all of the minutes of all of the guests. And so he'll have one like 45 minute long message from fans. So this will be your opportunity to add to that with your own minute of questions, comments, jokes you want to tell him, whatever you want to say.
Okay. Start yeah. out, Nicole Kidman is a queen, and you missed out, sir. you let a fabulous woman go, and you should be ashamed of yourself. But aside that, I have found your couch jumping antics incredibly empowering in my life. Whenever I go to IKEA, I'm just inspired to just jump on all the couches and annoy the heck out of the non-Swedish working employees, which is very upsetting to me as a Scandinavian that they're not Swedish, but that's aside from the point. Another point I want to say is that Scientology is a scam and you should probably reconsider your religion as well. In addition, Katie Holmes is a queen and you did not deserve her. But yeah.
out here with the criticisms today. Yeah, he's.
I praised his couch jumping.
That's true. He is a fool for leaving Nicole Kidman and a fool for leaving Katie Holmes. It's, you know, it's fine. That was great. Well, put in a quick commercial break, and then after the commercial break, we'll be back with a game. So stay tuned after this.
This is Tom Skerritt for the Borgen Project. Each year, nearly 2 million children die from preventable diseases. Each day, 30,000 people die from hunger. 500 each hour are children. The Borgen Project is turning this around. We need your help. To learn more, go to borgenproject.org. That's B-O-R-G-E-N project.org.
Biking in Chicago is more than just a mode of transportation. It's a lifestyle. It's convenient, affordable, and with 13,000 bike racks, parking is never a problem. But with every reward comes a sidecar of risk. In Chicago, over 1,700 cyclists a year are killed or injured in bike accidents involving motor vehicles. Bike safety is simple. First, become familiar with Chicago bike laws. Know your hand signals and when to use them. Love your brain. Get a bike helmet that fits your noggin and deck it out with a headlamp and some reflective gear for riding at night. Bike at least 3 to 4 feet away from parked cars to avoid being struck by a car door being open. Motorists can do their part too by checking their side view mirrors for bike traffic before exiting their vehicle. Most importantly, remember that we're sharing the road. Looking out for both ourselves and each other is the only way to keep Chicago's roads safe, no matter what your wheels look like. For more information on bike safety in Chicago, visit www.chicagobikes.org. This public service announcement was brought to you by Radio DePaul, Chicago's College Connection.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Radio DePaul. I'm Connor Mudd. This is Tom Talks, and I am here with Allie Durst. Wait, am I pronouncing your name correctly? Allie Durst.
Yes. You are. Yeah, it's basically German for thirst. So if you were to say I'm thirsty in German, you would say Ich habe Durst.
Oh, that's a fun fact.
Yeah, fun factoid.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to play a game called Night and Day. Night spelled with not a K, the way that the movie is spelled. Spelled N-I-G-H-T and Day. It is an opposites challenge. So I have a list of words. I think it's 10 words that do not have opposites. And we are going to have to try and come up with what the opposite for that word is. Even if it is, you know, something that in no way is there possibly an opposite. It is just a steady thing in the universe. We have to figure out what the opposite of it is. Our first word in the Night and Day Opposites Challenge is socks. What's the opposite of socks?
Foot pads. Like the bottom of your feet. Like, you know, like calluses.
just like the bottoms of a bare foot that it's like rough. Yeah. Is there a...
Because they're not soft.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, no, wait, I would want something that doesn't do the job socks do.
Okay. The calluses protect you from like the base of your shoe if you're wearing like sandals, the way that a sock would with sneakers. But I don't know. That's, I don't hate that. Calloused bottoms of the feet. they go together too. Sometimes opposites go together though. Like fire and ice. Never mind, those don't go together. Yeah, I think that is a good answer right off the bat.
I have ADHD, so I just say the first thing that comes to my mind.
And that'll work perfect.
Calluses.
Yeah, calluses. What would the opposite of a yield sign be? And like we can theorize in a world where there's a sign that
says Disney World sign.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I'm thinking of the feeling I feel. When I say yield sign, I'm like, what does that even mean, yield? You either stop or go. Don't tell me to yield. What does that even mean? Disney sign. You're like, oh, you know what? I feel really passionate about this. I'm excited. That's
Yeah, so Disneyland is definitive. Yield is mushy. It's very, it's as a concept.
Why do you even exist? What do you do for society? I know you probably stop a bunch of like traffic accidents, but what do you really do for society except pose a question on my like sophomore driving test form?
Yeah, the only thing they do for society is slow us down, and not in a positive way. Yeah, I can see that Disneyland sign. It's very definitive. It's very exciting. And heck, I would want to drive quicker if I saw that Disneyland was nearby. I'd just go straight to Disneyland.
Exactly.
Yeah. The next one's a verb. The verb is to debunk. Because you cannot bunk something.
Reddit.
Reddit? Yeah.
Most people think they're debunking, but what they're really doing is they're just making things more complex. And therefore, it is a great opposite because it's people trying to do that one thing, but it's an anomaly because they're doing the complete opposite of what they're trying to do.
Yeah. the opposite. What would be de facto bunking would be Reddit 100%. Yeah.
Or the League of Legends patch notes. I read them and I'm like, wait, what does a 2% increase in attack speed mean? Like, it's only 2%. I don't get it. And so it's like, you think you're debunking your horrible patching, balancing work, but you're not. You're just confusing your Iron One player base.
Valid. What would the opposite of a cardboard box be?
A fridge.
A fridge.
Because it actually is able to insulate things.
Well, yeah. It's insulatory. It's very thick, very sturdy in a way that a cardboard box isn't. Wouldn't work as a home or a rocket ship in a pinch, you know, if you're a kid just vibing in a cardboard box. Can't do that in a fridge. I mean, you could. You shouldn't.
You just pull the Joker. Just take out all the trays and stuff and just pop right in.
It's chilly. Too hot out there. Yeah, I think fridge makes a ton of sense there. What about orange? Not the fruit, the color.
Quart system. I was thinking of Orange is the New Black. I was going to say, like, I'm gay, but I was going to say lesbians. But I was like, no, that's bad. Like, I'm one, so it's okay. Like, that doesn't work for it because that's just confusing. And sure. So then I was like, orange. I've been watching a lot of 60 Days In as well. And the opposite of prisons is the court system. Well, not really. I guess it would be organized crime is the opposite of prison. So I guess let's say organized crime.
Organized crime is the opposite of orange.
The Japanese Yakuza.
Yeah, that makes, I suppose that makes some sense.
The Untouchables, the film.
I see the connection. What is the opposite of silk?
British. Because I'm reminded of the Silk Roads.
Okay.
China. And so you have the like beautiful, graceful, amazing Orient, and then you have like the British.
Yeah.
Blimey.
It's definitely the British are anything but like smooth and calming the way that silk is. They're very, yeah, very harsh.
Yeah, I don't get, honestly, like all these, I don't get why we all thought like British people were like all these like smooth intellectual people. I mean, I blame like Kingsman and stuff. Like the people in the beginning of Kingsman are what the majority of the British youth are like. like the adults are fine, but like they're kind of like, I feel like slobs where they're just like hanging around in like Adidas track suits all the time, just chilling.
Yeah, just eating under seasoned food and being fine with it.
Yeah, just like, yeah, eating like just broiled chicken,
just fish, just one hunk of just fried like fish.
Gollum.
Yep.
Gollum.
Straight up. what would be the opposite of a table?
So when I think of table, I think of something that is functional and something that you can put something on and it's functional and it'll stay. And so I'm going to say a car, because often people will put things on top of their car and it will fall out, or they'll forget that they have it on top of their car, and then they'll drive and it'll just like fall off.
Huh.
So car.
Yeah. Something that it is impossible to have it stay still. Yeah. I like that, because cars also are unsturdy. Well, I think we've got three more fun little night and day opposites. Honey. What's the opposite of honey?
When I think of honey now, I think of the browser extension that I'm constantly being bombarded with by YouTubers, and I don't like that. And so I'm going to say NordVPN. Or Raid Shadow Legends. Raid Shadow Legends is the opposite of honey.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I'm not gonna lie, I do use honey, and it is lovely every third time, but the first two times suck. It never gives me discounts, but the third time I use it, it gives me a discount. And I'm like, why doesn't it work the first two? I don't get it. But yeah, Nord, I get so many NordVPN ads. So many. I don't even use it. I should.
There's so many VPN ads.
It's too much. Too many. The next one is a little, I'd call this one different to the others. Because like Honey and Silk, I think are very similar. But the next one is Giraffe. What is the opposite of a giraffe?
Turkey.
Yeah?
Turkey.
Sure. I mean, they both have long necks, though. And they both have kind of long tongues.
I don't know why I thought of turkey. I don't know. I've been watching too much Eurovision, and I was thinking about Dustin the Turkey, the puppet that Ireland summoned in 2008. I think when I also hear giraffe, I think of the I'm a giraffe vine. And so I guess I would say chicken, actually. I revise it because another classic vine is look at all those chickens. And it's more calm in comparison. It's not as chaotic. So I will say the calmer chicken.
Yeah, I think that fits. Because chickens are also, they're kind of short and stout. They taste good. I don't think giraffes taste very good. I wouldn't know, but, you know, I assume.
Giraffes are weird. I don't get how they have that much blood flow. Because, like, they can, like, move their necks all around. And, like, I just lean off my bed, like, with my head back for, like, two seconds, and I get lightheaded. So I don't know how they get all that, like, they must have, like, an hydraulics, like, just shooting their blood up their head.
A very, very powerful heart. Just to pump it.
Just choo-choo.
It's like an oil drill, basically. Pressure just built up just straight up the neck of the giraffe. Oh, yeah, chickens, 100%. The last one, what is the opposite of a cookie?
When I hear cookie now, I think of cookies, another type of cookie that we're not mentioning on this show. And then I also think of like browser cookies. And so with that, I shall say a rock.
Wait, I want to clarify. A rock or Iraq?
Well, I mean, both would work because they're both taste bad, I'm guessing. I would probably break your teeth if you tried to eat them. So I guess both are applicable in this sense.
Sure.
Yeah. But I mean, Iraq, I feel like, would like try and hack into your browser like cookies do. So in that sense, it isn't applicable in all senses. But I mean, like, Iraq can do just as much damage to your computer as cookies as well. Like, you can just chuck it at it at your hard drive. So
you know, both could work. Oh, that's excellent. Well, yeah, that's all I've got for you for Tom Talks. Thank you for coming on the show. Thanks for playing Night and Day, the Opposites Challenge.
Definitely. Did I win?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I haven't kept score in a game on this show in, I don't know, a year. All right, we're going to go into a quick song break. Then after that, synopsis, fast facts, fun facts, and a data breakdown. After this. Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Radio DePaul. I'm Connor Mudd. This is Tom Talks, and that was Rock You Like a Hurricane by The Scorpions. Fun little classic rock song featured in a fun little weird movie. The movie we're talking about today is, of course, Night and Day. An interesting film, to say the least. It is an action film that is, you know, fun and quirky and weird, and I think that that's exactly what we need in our action movies. I'll go into a little bit of a synopsis, followed by fast facts, fun facts, and a data breakdown. So starting off,
Returning home to Boston from buying car parts in Wichita, June Havens collides with Roy Miller at the airport twice and is bumped to a later flight. CIA agent John Fitzgerald, believing June is working with Roy, puts her back on the plane. While June is in the plane's restroom, Roy subdues the passengers and flight crew, all agents sent by Fitzgerald, and crash lands the plane in a cornfield. He drugs the shocked June, warning that agents will come after her. Waking at home, June prepares for her sister April's wedding and learns that she wants to sell their father's 1966 Pontiac GTO Tri-Power, which June had planned to restore as a wedding gift. June is picked up by Fitzgerald and his agents. Roy appears, killing numerous agents in a highway chase and rescuing June. She flees to her ex-boyfriend Rodney, a firefighter, before Roy arrives and pretends to take June hostage. Roy persuades June that she is safer with him and reveals that he is in the possession of a Zephyr, a perpetual energy battery. He had been assigned to guard its inventor, Simon Feck, until Fitzgerald tried to steal the battery, framing Roy. In Brooklyn, June and Roy discover Feck has gone into hiding but left Roy a clue that he is in the Alps. They are attacked by henchmen sent by Spanish arms dealer Antonio Quintana. Drugged again, June drifts in and out of consciousness as they are captured and then escape to Roy's off-the-grid island. Accepting a call from her sister, June accidentally leads Quintana's men to the hideaway. Escaping Quintana's unmanned aerial assault vehicle in a helicopter, Roy knocks out June to circumvent her fear of flying. June wakes up aboard a train in Austria, where Roy has reunited with Simon, and they manage to kill Bernard, an assassin hired by Quintana. After checking into a hotel in Salzburg, June follows Roy to a meeting with Naomi, Quintana's henchwoman, where he offers to sell the Zephyr. Fitzgerald and CIA director Isabel George find June and reveal that Roy used her at the airport to smuggle the Zephyr past security. Heartbroken, June leads the CIA to the hotel. Fleeing across rooftops, Roy is shot and falls into the river with the Zephyr. Simon is kidnapped from CIA custody by Fitzgerald, the real traitor, to be delivered to Quintana in Spain. Returning home, June attends her sister's wedding and visits an address Roy had been monitoring, where she meets his parents and learns his real name is Matthew Knight. They believe their son, an Army sergeant and Eagle Scout, was killed in action and have won various lotteries and sweepstakes they do not remember entering. Leaving a message on her own answering machine declaring that she has the Zephyr, June is taken by Quintana's men to Sevilla. Drugged with a prototype truth serum, June explains that Roy's deal with Quintana was meant to alert the CIA so June would be returned home safely in time for the wedding. Roy, tracking Fitzgerald, rescues June and leads Quintana and his men on a car chase. Quintana is killed by a bull stampede, and Roy trades Fitzgerald the Zephyr for Simon. Fitzgerald shoots Simon anyways, but Roy takes the bullet instead. Simon reveals that the battery is unstable and it explodes, killing Fitzgerald. Roy is hospitalized in Washington, D.C., where George tells him that June has moved on and welcomes him back to the CIA. However, George's coded language, as Roy explained to June earlier, reveals that he would be killed. June, disguised as a nurse, drugs Roy and breaks him out of the hospital. Waking up in June's rebuilt GTO, Roy and June drive towards Cape Horn, and Roy's parents unexpectedly receive their own tickets to Cape Horn. This movie begs a lot of questions about consent, because there are so many instances of drugging the main female character in this film that are probably frowned upon. Excellent cast, though, truly, in this movie, despite its fairly problematic premise. I'll go into a little bit of a fast facts, and we'll talk a little bit more about it as we go. This movie was directed by James Mangold, who also directed Logan and Walk the Line and Ford v. Ferrari and Girl Interrupted. He's a story director, does a lot of really good drama pieces, some semi-action movies, but this is kind of an explicit action film, and it's not necessarily his comfort zone. It's written by Patrick O'Neill, who also wrote Mary Shelley's Frankenhole and Bang Bang and Sun Gods. Not a great writer is what I'm trying to say. Probably some questionable content that he's written in the past. Hence, a story filled with just Tom Cruise drugging women is basically the premise of this movie. The cast is excellent, though. June is played by Cameron Diaz, who, if you don't know Cameron Diaz, come on. But Charlie's Angels, Shrek, There's Just Something About Mary, excellent actress. Fitzgerald is played by Peter Sarsgaard from Shattered Glass and Garden State. Antonio is played by Jordi Moya, who is in Riddick and Criminal and Bad Boys 2. Director George, the CIA agent, is actually Viola Davis, of all people, which is just phenomenal. You know, from Fences and The Help and Suicide Squad and Ma Rainey's Big Black Bottom, the new Oscar-nominated film. So, you know, Viola Davis, Cameron Diaz in a cast together, excellent. Simon Feck is played by Paul Dano from Little Miss Sunshine, 12 Years a Slave. He actually, Paul Dano and Peter Sarsgaard are both in the upcoming Batman project. Paul Dano, I believe, is playing the Riddler. And then Naomi, who is the henchwoman to the evil dude, is played by Gal Gadot, or Gal Gadot. I don't actually know how to pronounce her name. But Wonder Woman is played by Wonder Woman, who's also in the Fast and Furious movies and Ralph Breaks the Internet, the Wreck-It-Ralph movie, and a few other things like Death on the Nile. But yeah, you have Wonder Woman, you have the guy playing the Riddler in the upcoming movies. It's really just a great little cast. It's not as impressive as some of his older casts or the cast that has, you know, Robert Downey Jr. and friends on it, but excellent cast nonetheless. Some fun facts: Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz both did their own stunts, which is pretty impressive considering the amount of car chases in this one. They all learned stunt driving and specifically motorcycle stunts as well. This movie was also remade in Bollywood in 2014. That's Bang Bang, I mentioned a little earlier. The same writer rewrote it for a Bollywood film. Early casting for this movie had Chris Tucker and Eva Mendes instead of Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz. Again, it would have been a problematic movie either way, but it would have been an interesting other cast choice. Probably a little bit funnier, because Chris Tucker is a little bit funnier than Tom Cruise. And then another really fun fact, Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz both drove cars on Top Gear to promote this movie, which I really like as a premise of movie promotion, especially in a movie that involves so much stunt driving. I'll go into a little bit of a data breakdown. This one, this ends a four movie trip of not great movies. We remember we had our four really good movies followed immediately by four not so good movies, and this is the last of those not so good movies. As you know, I rate every movie on enjoyment, engagement, quality, iconography, and the Tom Cruise factor. This one I enjoyed. I was thoroughly engaged, but very low quality. Pretty Tom Cruise-y on the whole, and fairly iconic. It got a 66 out of 100 as the total compound score, which is the best of the last four, but still not a great score on the whole. It's one that I don't necessarily recommend to people unless they love action for the sake of action, because that's the gist of it. You have Cameron Diaz fresh off of Charlie's Angels, and you have Tom Cruise, who is in the prime of his action career. This is right before he did Ghost Protocol, so he really is good at that action. But yeah, on the whole, it's okay. It's a fine movie. But yeah, that's all the time that we have for today. Tune in after spring break. I'll be talking about his last 9 or 10 movies with Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. And as always, stay gold, Pony Boy.